You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hi, this is Dr. Steve Carstensen, and you're watching the Best Practices Show.
Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practice Show. We take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over and some of the hottest topics we're examining this week. This one is one of the biggest selling out courses everywhere. You're hearing about it. It's not going away. It's called Airway. And we've got one of the worldwide experts on this. Today, we're going to be talking about children's airway and what dentists need to know about it. You do not want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this with Dr. Steve Carstensen, good buddy of mine who I've been watching for years and years and years on the lecture circuit. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching this, if you have questions, continue to add them to the feed and I'll give them to Steve right away and we'll get the answer straight from him while he's on here live with us. Or if you're watching them later on, continue to add questions to the feed because we want you to get the most out of this. And again, even this morning, keep sending your suggestions for shows. Thank you guys so much. We are so grateful. Up over 39,000 followers now on Facebook and over 150,000 of you have visited us on iTunes. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, my guest today, you and I have known each other for a while, Steve, and yep. You have been to all the great schools of thought, and you're leading one of the biggest topics in all of dentistry now called airway. Talk about this. First of all, if people don't know who you are, give us a little background on who you are and what you do.
Sure, Kurt. Steve Carstensen, I'm a practicing dentist in Bellevue, Washington. Been a restorative dentist for 30 years, but about 20 years ago, I started paying attention to airway issues. One of my mentors in dentistry, Dr. Keith Thornton out of Dallas, started saying, man, you got to start paying attention to this. This is so important for dentists to do. And I started treating adult airway problems. People were coming in with snoring and sleep apnea. Made a big difference in my practice, made a big difference in just how I was able to help people in their lives. Started to affect my restorative dentistry a little bit in a couple of different ways. And I realized that I was dealing with side effects of bad breathing for decades in some of these people. Sometimes they were tooth grinders. They had trouble keeping their mouth open at nighttime. Sometimes have trouble keeping their mouth closed at nighttime. So they had dry mouth. So all these things in adults. And I concentrated on treating adults for a long time. And as the kind of the science has come around, and we've realized that, wow, these people didn't start their airway problems when they were, 50 years old. Then we thought, well, what are we going to do to not grow another generation of 50-year-olds with 10 years, 20 years, 30, 50 years of airway problems? And I started looking into children's airway, finding out that, wow, in adults, we kind of know what to do. There are some new things coming around, but there's not a lot of new things. But in kids, there's just a wide open field of how people can help these children have a better airway. And at first, I thought, well, you know, it's kind of like snoring, you know, in adults, and airway issues in adults, not that difficult to treat and pretty straightforward. You get them to stop snoring, you get them to have an open airway at nighttime, they feel better, we're done. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not like that, but it's kind of like that. In kids, because they're growing and because we have a chance to impact their brain development and their behavior at school, it just became more exciting. And as I looked into that, as you know, one of the people out there teaching this, people would ask me questions in rooms all the time. You know, what should we do about our kids? My kid snores. Should I worry about that? Is tooth grinding in kids something to be a problem? And I thought, well, I don't have answers for that. So I started looking into that, and I realized there's some answers for that, and not to the level of science like we're used to in adults. That made me a little uncomfortable, so I kept asking questions. And I'm realizing that there's a whole field of how to treat kids' airways that nobody is really claiming because we have to think so differently about children's airway than we do about adult airways. And that's pretty exciting. You know, it's cool to be challenged professionally that way and have to learn more stuff and deal with a lot more of my professional colleagues at different levels, which I enjoy that part. Right. And so it makes it something I want to bring to the people that are coming to me to listen to about snoring sleep apnea. I want to bring another message that says, look younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is, I mean, there's nobody better positioned than dentists to really understand this and help people in the future. And this is no small thing. This is a worldwide epidemic. And you and I were just talking about the practical, pediatric airway conference that you got the 80. Yeah. I mean, it's almost sold out. I mean, people, these courses are selling out like crazy. Give us some perspective on how popular this topic is.
Well, one of the reasons this all came about is because I would be out there talking about adult airways, and the questions were all coming up about kids. I would talk to my colleagues that are teaching about this, and they say, yeah, all the questions are about kids. Mm-hmm. I'd be leading courses at Spear. I'd be leading courses at Pankey Institute or other places I teach. What about the children? And so I taught last year, and how this kind of came about is last year in the summertime, I was at American Dental Association headquarters in Chicago. And they were about to pass the sleep-related breathing disorders policy statement for dentists that they passed in October. One of those paragraphs is about children's airway. The second paragraph says we're supposed to screen for kids' airways, identify whether there's a problem, and then get them appropriate treatment or referral to help establish an open airway. Mm-hmm. I asked some people, thought about myself, and I asked some experts, I said, what does that mean? What do dentists out there do with that statement? I mean, how do we help them with that? And there's no definitions for the things that they came up with. I talked to the person on the Council on Dental Practice who actually wrote that statement and put it in there. He said, look, I intended that to go in there so that we would all be forced to learn more about kids' airway.
Right.
And so I worked with ADA, and they are putting on for the first time a multidisciplinary type of a conference there at ADA headquarters about kids' airway. I would call experts in the field, otolaryngologists and orthodontists and surgeons and researchers, and every one of all these leaders said, wow, we should have had this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So ADA is hosting this conference. I'm kind of trying to push them, our dentist organization, into paying a lot more attention. And it's a willing field, I think. So they're hosting a conference in the CE conference is on a Friday and Saturday in August on the 24th and 25th. And you can find out more about that at ada.org/CE Live. But that conference has physicians, it has researchers, it has myofunctional therapists and orthodontists and billing specialists and behavioral specialists, a PhD behavioral specialist. The reaction from the American Dental Association was, wow, why would dentists want to come listen to a bunch of physicians? Mm-hmm. And it turns out this thing sold out, is nearly sold out, because when I go around the country and I talk to colleagues and I talk to our colleagues in dentistry, they go, where can we learn more about kids' airway? And this is a start.
Yeah, it's a great start. And Steve, you and I were talking about this. One of the important things to understand about this concept is the methodology. Nobody totally agrees. Now, tell us about that.
Well, if you think about, if you know anything about treating sleep medicine or dental sleep medicine, as it was called, this was discovered in overweight older men. So pulmonologists realized that people weren't breathing well at nighttime. And that's how the field of sleep medicine began, is learning about how to make sure overweight old men would stay alive through the night in a hospital setting. That expanded, of course, into the field of sleep medicine as a specialty, but it's still focused on adults. We have a tool in adult sleep medicine that is a CPAP. We have oral appliances, and we have some invasive ways of treating it. We have those two non-invasive ways of treating it, which is great. Now, we think, wait a minute, there's a child not breathing well at nighttime too. But if our only tool we have is the CPAP, for example, then we try to apply that to a child. There's no truer place that the old axiom of a child is not just a little adult applies more than right here. And if we take a CPAP and we put it on a child, yes, we can open the airway. We can make sure they breathe at nighttime. But what's different, obviously, about kids versus the 50-year-old is that children are growing. In their four, five, six, you know, single-digit years, they achieve 95% of the growth of the skull, of the maxillofacial complex. So if we can get to those children while they're growing anyway in those single-digit years, we have the opportunity to shape that housing for the airway so that they can become a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 50-year-old with a bigger airway. Right. And nobody does that other than dentists, because ear, nose, and throat physicians, they have a great role to play in sometimes tonsils and adenoidectomy. Sleep physicians, they have a CPAP. And what is a CPAP other than just a nut, like a headgear? Mm-hmm. So it keeps the upper jaw back as you kind of put a mask on. If you know what a CPAP is, you know, the mask and the straps on the side. So it kind of, it keeps our growth backwards. Dentists, on the other hand, we're the masters of this whole complex, cranial, facial, respiratory complex. We can assess a five-year-old and think, wait a minute, that upper jaw isn't yet grown to its maximum potential. Is it wide enough? Is it forward enough? And if we can get it more forward and wider, now we've taken the framework of not only what we've always paid attention to, which is how the teeth are aligned, but we've also taken the framework of the nasal airway. We've taken the framework of the palate draping in the back of the throat. How the kid breathes is affected by the position and shape of the upper jaw, and we're the masters of that.
Yeah,
that's why dentists are involved.
Yeah, and dentists, this is so critical, because you take that same five-year-old and they aren't presented with the expertise or knowledge of what's really happening. Talk about this. This kid grows to be 7, 8, 9 years old, isn't sleeping, comes home. Teacher talks to the parent says what's going on, teacher says what's going on. It's really easy to write a kid a script for speed for the rest of their life, right? If they don't know that the kid isn't breathing at night, which affects general brain function. How big of a problem is that, Steve?
The research is showing if they're not getting enough oxygen at nighttime, then they lose brain cells that can't ever be replaced. Mm-hmm. And by the time adolescents are taking tests in their mid-teenage years, the kids that they can look back on and have had breathing problems have fewer brain cells and bigger spaces within their brains than the kids who didn't have airway problems. Mm-hmm. So I hate that thought. I just detest the thought of having an opportunity to help a child grow to its maximum potential and then not taking advantage of that because we didn't have the right tools or we didn't apply the right thinking for that. So I want to change that. The other thing that you mentioned is behavioral issues. So you know what? Before I knew any about any of these things, and frankly, I don't have any children, so I never faced this myself, but I would hear about these kids with ADHD and ADD, and they would be given amphetamines, stimulant, speed is what they're given. You know, just the thought of that just kind of bugs me anyway. But why does this work, I would ask? And they say, well, we really don't know why a child who is hyperactive responds better to an amphetamine. You know, we don't understand it too well, but it works, so we do it. And now they're, thankfully, the research is catching up. And what they've realized is that these children that are hyperactive are behaving poorly because their brains aren't ready for the day. They're not rested through the nighttime. And what's the most reasonable, or actually the most common reason why they wouldn't be rested through the nighttime is because they can't achieve their normal physiology. They can't breathe well.
Right.
And we look at those kids and we see the big tonsils, or we look at those kids and we see an open mouth posture because they're not breathing through their nose. We see a tongue in the way. We see a crowded oral pharynx. We see all the things that kind of just line up with the physiology that we already know. Mm-hmm. This says, wow, breathing isn't happening the way it's supposed to. So we're using, it's difficult to, the research is interesting because in adults, we can put adults in a lab and we can do bad things to adults with their consent to see what happens to them. Can't do that to kids. Plus, children are growing. And so if we have a year-long study, that 10-year-old used to be 9, you know, that 7-year-old used to be 6, and things change in that time frame more than they don't go between, say, 50 and 51. So the research is not traditional research. It's not randomized control trials in many cases. We have to do case control studies and a little bit of longitudinal studies and a little bit of prospective studies and a little bit of retrospective studies where we look back and see, okay, what was this kid like when he was 7?
Right.
Which in some cases we have some good data on. In many cases we don't. So nobody knows what my breathing was like when I was 7, for example, because nobody paid attention back then. Right. Nowadays, the good researchers have been paying attention now for a little while. So the research is accumulating rapidly on that.
Right. So what do you hope comes out of this? Because you're very involved with this. When you talk about the methodology, are we hoping that when you start doing conferences like this, that we can all come together and come up with a methodology that we can all agree on?
Well, that's absolutely the hope. We have policy statements and position papers by different medical specialties on how to treat adult airways. We have the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, the American Thoracic. We have several organizations that have said, okay, for adults, this is what we do. I went looking for kids' airway, and they're so general because we don't have enough consensus about doing this. So one of the thoughts I had was, well, we've been bringing all these people to Chicago for a CE conference. What if we asked them? And actually, what's not a public meeting is happening, but I'm very excited for this because, again, our American Dental Association is hosting a meeting in their trustees boardroom in Chicago of an otolaryngologist who's writing the new position paper for the whole field of otolaryngology about tonsils and adenoids. We're having an orthodontist there that represent the American Academy of Orthodontists, some researchers, myofunctional therapists, all these people. And we're going to begin the process of creating a document that we can say, okay, how do we treat kids' airways? This document is it. It's not going to be, I don't want it to be, my vision, let's say it this way, my vision is it's not going to be owned by anybody, but we'll have signatories to it. So that the dentist will sign on, the otolaryngologist will sign on, the pediatric dentist, the pediatricians will not have to do a lot of work. They'll just sign on to this. And that way it becomes a document we can all look to. Mm-hmm. Because it'll be formed by people very deep into this, smart folks who will put their views in. So we'll know what kind of research supports what we're going to come up with. I don't know what it's going to look like yet. I get the feeling it's going to be something, because that's really, you know what, Kirk, that's not really my expertise. I'm a passionate guy who puts people together and tries to make things happen. You know, in terms of, I'm not a researcher. I don't know what Dr. David Gazal is going to say about this, or Dr. Guy Minot, or Dr. I hate to blank out on these things. What my behavioral specialists are going to say about these things, you know. But I do know that if we ask the right questions, they're very interested in making sure that we get the right things down on paper. Yeah. And other people will weigh in on this too. And so we'll have a document that's never been done like this before, where all these different professions will put their parts in, so we can all kind of agree on that. Now, that'll have a—I mean, it's a rosy picture, and I guess I can't say that I. You know what, Kirk? I gotta believe we're gonna be all agreement.
I would hope so. And that's on the, you know, we're on the cusp of that. And while we don't know what this document is going to look like, we're hopeful. Let's talk about what we do know for sure, which is TMD. Like, let's talk about that and what we know for sure what not to do. Even though there's dentistry, you know, is fractioned in this. Let's talk about TMD and what not to do when it comes to.
Well, let's think about history here. You know, I've been in restorative dentistry 32 years. I happened to go to Pankey Institute, so I learned a certain way of looking at TMD issues going that way. Well, as I get out in the world and I go to meetings and I realize that, wow, you know, what I learned at Pankey is not what everybody believes in. There's another group out there that believes a different way, another group that believes a third way. How do you treat these things? How do you diagnose them? There's not a indication for what to do exactly with everybody that walks in your office as a dentist for TMD issues. Because here's a story. Dr. Michael Brown is a physician in our area, an orthopedist. And he said, he was giving a lecture to some dentists. He said, guys, he said, I realize the only joint in the body that I, as an orthopedic physician, don't do anything with is the jaw joint. Because it got separated from medicine a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And because there's a lack of, quote, medical necessity for treating jaw joint problems, there's not been a ton of research, and the research we have is biased. So there's fine. We get to treat TMD any way we want. But if you ask 100 dentists, how do we do this, you'll get a lot of different answers. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought, gosh, you know, what if we don't do that for children's airway? What if we start on a different pathway? What if we don't let this get fractured away from medicine? What if we don't, if we acknowledge the medical necessity? What if we embrace the research? What if we come up with a statement that we can all look at and go, wow, I think I agree enough with that, that that can form how I'm going to help these kids in my practice. So again, back to the growth and development part, nobody knows that except dentists. And that means we're at the forefront of this. In adults, we're dealing with these chronic non-infective diseases, you know, heart disease, diabetes, all these things that have gone on for all these years because of the physiologic challenge, in part, of bad breathing through the nighttime and the body's reaction to that. Children haven't had a chance to develop chronic non-infective diseases yet. They're too young for chronic disease. So if we're going to be able to head that off, and we don't know that we're going to do that yet, the research doesn't show that yet, but what if we can establish a better physiology and allow the body to be healthy at a young age, at 5 years old? It just seems to me like they got to be healthier later. So if we're going to make the airway open and diagnose the problem as an airway problem, instead of waiting and diagnosing it as a sleep problem, which is what we have for adults, then we're actually dealing with the etiology of a problem instead of the symptom. Mm-hmm. In adults, people come to see me because they're referred in, they go to the sleep physician because they don't sleep well. And they're diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea. So they have this disease called sleep apnea. In kids, yes, they can have obstructive sleep apnea, but the disease is a bad airway. And the sleep problems are a side effect of that. The bedwetting is a side effect of that. The behavioral problems, the issues they have with insomnia, those are all side effects of a bad airway. So I want to get to the heart of it and see, well, what can we do to make the airway better as young as possible? How can we get that done? Well, again, back cycles right back to dentist again. So instead of being separate from all of that, we're going to be the go-tos for these kids. And then the physicians and the ENTs and the behaviorists and the myofunctional therapists, those people are all going to be helping get that child as healthy as possible. But the fundamental is we get the airway open.
Right. Now, can I, I'm going to dish you the questions that I get too. And I'm sure you get these. If I'm a young dentist, watch this. I go, Steve, yeah, I get this, but I have a practice and I'm trying to make it work financially. Like, is it possible to integrate sleep? Cause I know it's the right thing to do, but is it viable in my business model? I mean, you get that all the time, I'm sure.
Well, one of the cool things is almost all of airway issues can be dealt with by auxiliaries because we don't have to get involved too much. We don't have to fit precise pieces of tooth. It's not a surgical process. We don't remove things. So we don't need a license to do surgery for treating an airway. So that means it's a removable appliance of some type or another. And in adults, of course, you're familiar with mandibular advancement devices for helping that. Now, we have to be very involved because of the side effects of those things, TMD and other things. But in kids, it's growth and development. So if we can identify, use our doctor skills to identify where the etiology is. We have a badly growing maxilla. We have a tongue that's in the wrong place. We have nose breathing problems, those kind of things. Then we take our highly trained auxiliaries and we get them going on it. They get to deal with the little kids, and that's fun for a lot of them. And it doesn't disrupt the schedule so much. Right. So we might have to have a space for it in our office. We certainly have to have some systems for that. But the doctor time is not that burdensome. So right. we can have a ton of fun and keep up our finances and our offices and, and not disrupt our systems too much by adding the service in. It does take some training. And there's a few places you can get some myofunctional trainings, a few places you can get some functional appliance training. So think about this. If you have a child who's mouth breathing, for example, this is a real simple example, their mouth is hanging open. With their mouth is hanging open, by definition, their tongue cannot be in the roof of their mouth. And if their mouth is hanging open, their tongue isn't up there in their palate, then the kind of the tension of the sidewall, the buccal mucosa, the buccal muscles, is all pinching that maxilla. So it's pretty easy to visualize a maxilla that's too narrow. The palate's too tall. Well, on top of the palate is the nose, and in the middle of the nose is the septum. If you have a palate that's bowing upwards, you have less room for that septum. So what might happen? The septum might become deviated. And so we have a bent over septum. Is that going to improve nose breathing or decrease nose breathing? So it's going to decrease that. If we the science says, if we move that maxilla sideways and expand it widely, the nose breathing gets better. Mm-hmm. And we train the child to breathe better through the nose. So now all of a sudden we can put the tongue in the roof of the mouth, we can expand the maxilla, we can drop the floor of the nose down, the septum doesn't get deviated, and we have a child off on the right track. That can be done with functional appliances in many cases. It takes some training, but what you do is you put it kind of like a mouth guard in, only this mouth guard holds the buccal mucosa, holds the cheek tissues away from that maxilla and promotes the tongue in the middle. So if you think about the tongue going up in the palate, pushing sideways on the maxilla, and nothing keeping it from growing sideways because you have a shield out to the side, it's pretty simple to visualize that upper jaw getting wider. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also ways you have to bring it forward, too. So there's some other things you have to pay attention to. But just thinking about that, just thinking about wider upper jaw, lower floor of the nose, better nose breathing, closed lips. And then we got a child much better off than a child who's you observe and you think, wow, why are they breathing through their mouth all the time?
Right. Now, if I'm a dentist watching this, Steve, I'm thinking, gosh, it's isolating enough just being a dentist, trying to talk to other professionals. But like, this is a really important conversation to have with other professionals. I'm thinking ortho, like talk about some of the trends that you're seeing with a great restorative dentist who's getting like, how important is the orthodontist role? And then maybe the other specialists or other professionals, what would you say to a young dentist who might be watching this?
You know, what's really exciting is to see the changes in our profession and the different parts of our profession. So you can't go to an orthodontic meeting. You can't pick up an orthodontic journal without seeing something about airway and breathing, because the orthodontists are starting to pay very close attention. They realize their role in growth and development is amazing, but not every orthodontist, because I was in a discussion with an orthodontist recently, and they were talking about this early treatment and plus late treatment versus just waiting until their adolescence. And there's a section of orthodontists out there that have not embraced airway yet that see early treatment as just a way to get kids into your office and take some more money out of their pocket, when ultimately you don't realize a different outcome at the other side. The key to it is for every dentist who's interested in helping child's airway is to talk to the orthodontist in their community and see, what do you think about airway issues? What do you think about early intervention? What do you think about growth and development of the maxilla and mandible and paying attention to nose breathing? If they just are on the fence about that, and they just don't see that that's something that they want to do, you know, thank them for their service. Send as many adult patients to them as you're comfortable with. But take your kids to the orthodontist who says, wow, I am so happy to see a four-year-old. You know, I really want to get that kid in at five and see what we can do to make sure they're better off. Because the key is not when they're adolescents. When I was growing up, we didn't know about any of this stuff. And so when I got to be a teenager, it was time for braces because my teeth were really crooked. And what did they have to do? They had to pull out some teeth and they had to realign everything else so I could have a reasonable smile. I was at a lecture talking about this a few years ago, and a gentleman came up and said, "Steve, I want to just apologize to you." And I went, "Apologize? Why?" He said, "I was your dentist in high school and I sent you to get the teeth out for the orthodontist." And I said, "That's the best we could do at the time. Nobody knew any different." And right. so what we have to do now, though, is we have to realize we have to be different. And if we can get these kids to adolescence with plenty of bone to support their airway, guess what? There's plenty of bone to support all the teeth, too. Well, Dr. Kevin Boyd is looking back in history as an anthropologist. He's a pediatric dentist in Chicago. He's part of the task force that's put this meeting together next month in Chicago. And he and other orthodontists are looking at skulls. And they realized that in ancient times, skulls didn't have crowded teeth. They had plenty of room for all their teeth. It was a diet thing. So there's a lot dentists can learn about diet and coaching people as well. But key is that in your community, you see a child with an open mouth posture, you see them with bad jaw structures, find an orthodontist to work with. You're also going to need to find an ENT physician that is interested in airway issues. Not every tonsil and adenoid needs to come out, but we have to address the blockage. So it could be an allergist that you work with. It could be a myofunctional therapist to help them breathe better through their nose. All these people exist out there, but in most general practices, why would we know about them?
Right.
And so finding a new community, and then these people, since it's kind of new for our profession, they tend to be quite excited about what they can do.
Right.
Being around excited people doing something different is an energizing process. So it's instead of going to a study club where you learn about a new composite, which, that's very valuable. I don't want to decrease that. But this is another level of excitement, where you have a study club of people that aren't dentists. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it would be. Now, I would love to know your thought on this, too. I always call the heroes of this profession the pediatric dentists, because they get the best at this, and they also get the worst of this profession. Give us a state of the union of, like, where pediatric dentists are at with this. Are you seeing more of an interest in this? Has it not taken, taken shape in pediatric dentistry? I'm always curious what you're seeing in that realm.
Kurt, I wish I could say an enthusiastic response to this one. I believe your pediatric dentists are going to be on the forefront of this as well, because they see all these kids. Now, they see a lot of kids that the general dentist can't see. But your average, and by the way, when we're talking about, I'll get back to the pediatrics in a second because it's key, but when we're talking about kids in trouble, most kids in trouble are normal kids. Other than breathing problems, they're normal. There are syndromic kids out there, genetic problems where their faces just are malshapen because of growth issues, genes issues. That's a different story. That's not what we're talking about in this level. Dentists are doing that too, but that's not their common everyday kid. All right, so back to the pediatric dentists. The ones that are interested in this are embracing this, but they're busy folks. Their organization has not been enthusiastic in my conference coming forward. And I've been talking with them, and it's not been well received yet, but I've been talking to some pediatric dentists who just are just as fervent about this as I am. Mm-hmm. So it'll change. The orthodontist and general dentists will be more excited about this right away than the pediatric dentists, but they'll come around.
Right. Now, again, like, I'm just going to go there. There's so much information. There's information everywhere. There's here. It's other. You've got an incredible periodical. My question is, like, what organizations would you suggest I start paying attention to?
Yeah. My favorite organization is the American Academy of Physiologic Medicine and Dentistry, AAPMD. Howie Hinden and Michael Gelb over in New York have just really pushed forward on making sure that we're paying attention not just to some mechanics of an airway or a jaw position, but really thinking about the whole person's health. And as this airway in kids thing has come around, they're going deeper and deeper into kids' airways. So get a hold of AAPMD. They do some really great meetings where they are really not interested in factions. They really want people coming together. They want physicians, they want dentists, they want different parts of dentistry. They invite different little groups together. They saw the TMD issue and had the same thought about, let's not divide, let's get together. So AAPMD is an excellent organization. That's my favorite of all these groups. Myofunctional therapy, AAOMS, Oral Myofunctional Society. Myofunctional therapists, I think, is going to be something that's important. Dr. Kristen Guillemot wrote papers about this years ago that says we can't do this if we don't train kids how to swallow and how to put their tongues in the roof of their mouth and how to breathe through their nose. And he's our guru about these things. I was with him last weekend, actually, and he loves myofunctional therapy, but he realizes that those groups, there's a few of them, have to get together and form a document that says, okay, this is what myofunctional therapy is. So when you talk to your myofunctional therapists in your communities, find out what their commitment is too. Some of them are not as interested in airway development as they are speech pathology, for example. They have a different role to play. So what it kind of turns out to be is like ear, nose, and throat doctors. ENT doctors, some of them are great at airway issues, and they really want to see kids, or they really want to help adults with nasal breathing. Other ones are much more interested in ears or in allergies or in vocal cords. So you just have to find the right specialist in your community. And it takes a little time, takes a little investigation, a few meetings, you know, and you sit down with people and you get clear about how you can help your kids in your practice. And when you do that, now you'll form this team, and it'll be an energizing team because the myofunctional therapists, the ENTs, the pediatricians, they're all looking for us too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I love to ask this question of you, if you don't mind. Like, the future is anyone's guess, but you're behind the scenes, behind the closed doors of some of these meetings. You're also out there all the time. What do you think the future of this aspect of dentistry is going to look like? What do you think it's going to look like 2 to 3, 4 years from now?
The medical profession is going to realize that their tools are limited. They're going to realize that our tools are the right ones to address the etiology. I believe that dentists and orthodontists and pediatric dentists, the people that can affect growth and development of the craniorespiratory complex, jaw structures, airway, are going to be the forefront. We're going to be, quote, in charge of this because it's not a medical problem when they're 5. Mm-hmm. It's a medical problem when they're 50. It's a growth and development problem when they're 5. And so we don't need to treat them like medical patients. We need to treat them like growth and development potentials. And that's us. And so it'll change a little bit as we rethink how do we approach a child with an airway problem different than how we have our patterns together for approaching adults with airway problems. Yeah. So it's going to be us. But yeah. It takes organizations to embrace that, right? So that's why I'm so proud of ADA for hosting this. Yeah. It's going to have to go through some process. If ADA, I've been on their councils. I know how it works a little bit over there, and it's great. It protects our profession so well because they're so scientific about what they do. And yeah. As we get this together and get the science together, it'll go through the right process. This will take a while. We have to be patient. But if we keep pushing, that boulder is going to go off the hill and it's going to roll and we're going to see how far it goes. Yeah. And I'm so excited to watch that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want you, can you give us some of the specifics on that? So, and I may have screwed up. It's the Pediatric Practical Conference. Is that what it's called?
It's a children's airway, a practical conference. Okay. Children's airway, a practical conference at ADA headquarters, August 24th and 25th.
Okay.
ADA.org/CELive. You'll go right there.
Absolutely. And I also want you to talk, you know, about your DSB, dental sleep. You know, I think it's fantastic what you put together. Now, is it a quarterly period or monthly? Like, it's an incredible periodical that you put together. So just talk about that if you wouldn't mind.
Well, yeah, 4.5 years ago now, coming up on 5 years ago, people realized, wow, we don't have a great magazine for dentists about airway issues. And that in that time was dental sleep medicine only, just adults and things. And Lisa Moeller is a publisher. She publishes 3 other magazines, Ortho Practice US, Implant Practice US, and Endo Practice US for these subsets of dentists there. And so she came to me and she said, well, what about a dental sleep medicine magazine. I said, well, we don't have one. She said, you want to be the editor? And I went, never been an editor, but I like to write. Can I do that? And she said, okay. So that's where we started. Now, you know what's cool is that people send me articles and ideas all the time, because it's so exciting to be a dentist out there doing these things. It's exciting for physicians to tell us what they want us to know. It's exciting for researchers to be able to tell us in practical terms how to make things happen. I like to emphasize that Dental Sleep Practice, which is published quarterly, is not a journal. So we don't have, I love references, but I don't need abstracts and materials and methods and all the things that we have to have in our peer-reviewed journals. Those are great. But this is where you go to get the clinical wisdom that you need. And there's going to be a children's section in every issue because, well, I'm the editor and I get to choose. And it's my passion, so that's what's going to happen. But it's no trouble getting the pages filled with really interesting articles about that. And we have articles from physicians all the time. We have articles from industry. We have articles from practicing dentists that just have a good idea. And we have Alan Moses is writing a fascinating series for us about the nasal growth and development of the airway. Last issue, we had something about embryology of it all. And this coming up one, it's all about nasal anatomy. And so it's really interesting what people can write for us. Sam Higdon out of Oregon wrote a four-part series on TMD issues. So it's critical if you're going to be dealing with airways. I think it's the best magazine out there for that. Of course, I'm a little biased on that one, Kirk. But yes. You can go online to dentalsleeppractice.com and see how to sign up for that. You can get it mailed to you every quarter in a hard copy. And so it's going to be, I think, more and more important as more and more dentists are involved. Where are they going to look to for how do I get some information about this? And mm-hmm. So far it's quarterly, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah,
no question. You have to check it out. So, Steve, I am always grateful for the time that we have together. And for you, Carvin, I know you're a busy guy. You're all over the country, you know, speaking, doing great things and helping us change the world. So one patient at a time. So thank you, buddy. I really appreciate this.
I got a thought to leave you with.
Please.
That is currently. Those of us in dentistry, actually humans, we can't abide by a child reaching their stage where they have all their adult teeth with a mouthful of cavities. That's just unacceptable. In the future, it's going to be just as unacceptable for that child to reach, have all of their adult teeth and have a compromised airway. And we can change that. And it's up to us. We're going to do it. It's going to happen. It'll happen in young dentist lifetime. And we'll be seeing a more impact on human health from paying attention to airways when they're young than we've had with fluoride. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. Amen, brother. Totally agree with you. There's never been a better time to be a dentist. Would you agree?
I love it. I love it. Yeah. There's so many opportunities to help.
Yeah. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else that's watching. But thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate you being on today. And if you enjoyed today, just do us a huge favor. Hit the share button. Share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions, things that you would love to see from Steve or other topics, anything you want to see. We'll do our best to line it up. And so until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.